The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello there, this is Fred Brack from the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974, and serving this service for over 10 years. If you'd like to talk to them, they can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now it's time to return to the May 2019 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. The theme this month is Bantam Beauties, how North Carolina's chickens became the stars of the show. Maybe we'll talk about some chickens in this article, although I don't see any on the pictures on the page here. This is the heading to the section. Farm Sweet Farm. North Carolina's heritage is rooted in agriculture, tobacco and cotton, sweet potatoes and soybeans, hogs and chickens. But our sprawling farmland continues to evolve. This month we celebrate Caswell County's French cows and Rockingham County's Tamworth pigs, the last sheep shearers in the mountains and the newcomer's garden in the Piedmont. Join us for a trip back to the farm. We start out with a cowman of Caswell County. There's a picture of the back of him walking away into the sunset. A trained engineer with a love of farming found his calling in rolling green hills and a herd of white French cows. Written by Jeremy Markovich. V. Mac Baldwin is a large man with white hair, metal-rimmed bifocals, a white cowboy hat, black suspenders, and a collared shirt tucked into his jeans. He carries a copy of the New Testament in his shirt pocket. As he drives around his farm in Caswell County, a wide-open expanse of pastures bounded by electric fences and dirt roads that run along the undulating hills, he talks about his cows. Mostly. They're white, Charolais, originally from France, leaner than Black Angus. VMAC controls the whole process, from breeding to selling them, top to bottom. He breeds them, raises them, finishes them. Normally those three steps are split up among different farmers. VMAC does it all, so that he can answer this question. Where did this beef come from? A supermarket butcher can't tell you in any great detail. VMAC can't. He explains most of this while driving down dusty roads of his farm at an idling pace. But when he really gets into a story, he has to bring his well-worn Toyota SUV to a full stop. I was on a business trip to Columbus, Ohio, he says, tires still bumping along at a gentle pace. This, he says, was in the late 1970s, when he was 36, back before he bought this farm. At 3 a.m., the phone in his hotel room rang. You need to come home, his wife Peggy told him. Their son Craig was sick. An ambulance was coming to take him to UNC Hospital. His kidneys weren't working. Peggy, a nurse, knew how bad the situation was. The Toyota slows down. I went to the Eastern Airlines terminal there in Columbus, he says, foot hovering over the brake. The airport was almost empty. He noticed a guy wearing a big overcoat and a felt hat to ward off the Ohio winter. The man was reading a pocket copy of the New Testament. They made eye contact. Hello, friend, the man said. Is there something wrong? VMAC told him about Craig. On the flight back to North Carolina, they started talking about their lives. VMAC felt that he couldn't get things done the way he wanted to, that he was being held back, that he shouldn't feel this way. He was an elder in his Presbyterian church, sang in the choir. The man, a retired federal judge, didn't seem too impressed. He asked VMAC if he could share his opinion of the situation. "You know a lot about Jesus," the judge said, "but you don't know him." The SUV stops. "I came home a changed man," VMAC says, his voice wavering. "I haven't been the same since." Craig became well again. VMAC became a Gideon. It wasn't long after that this farm came up for sale, he says, so we're living our dream. The Toyota starts rolling again. VMAC is silent for a few moments, then looks out toward a muddy field. "So, this project this year is to get these 90 acres in grass." Faith transformed VMAC's life. VMAC then set out to transform the land. "It's been said that I hate a tree," VMAC says, chuckling. "I don't hate a tree. It just gets in my way when I'm trying to grow some grass, you know? Once the land is cleared, it's great for cows. There's plenty of rain and fertile soil, and that lends itself to good grass. If you want to be in the beef business in this state, you need good grass." North Carolina is not a beef state. For one thing, there isn't enough open land. That requires clearing trees, which takes time, money, and a consistent, grueling effort. The Midwest, the Great Plains, and Texas, with their naturally wide-open expanses, are all turnkey ready for cattle. All of those areas are set up for large-scale beef operations because they're also close to plenty of grain. "There's no feed yards in North Carolina," VMAC says. "We are a grain-deficient state. We don't produce enough grain to feed our chickens and hogs. Even so, it's far more economical to bring in the small amount of feed you need to raise chickens or hogs than the huge amount for grain-guzzling cows. The result? This state is the second largest hog-farming state in the country behind Iowa. It's in the top five for chickens, but only about 1% of our nation's beef cows are raised in North Carolina." Still, VMAC has always wanted to be in the beef business. As a child, he had a calf of his own. This was on his grandfather's old tobacco farm in Durham. VMAC's parents thought the calf thing was just a phase, so they bought him one, and at age 10, he staked the calf up in his yard like a pet, took care of it. He later worked in a grocery store where the manager let VMAC take home unsold produce to feed his cow. He's never quite shaken his fondness for livestock. Out of high school, he went to work for the phone company, then joined the Navy, saw the world. He came back, enrolled at North Carolina State University, and majored in electrical engineering. He didn't take an AG degree because I didn't come off the farm. I would have been in a class with boys that had farm families, had generations of farms behind them, and that sort of thing, he says. And I said, "No way can I compete with those guys." But I could compete with them with the science and mathematics. After college, VMAC had a career working for Lucent and Bell Labs, but he always wanted to be a farmer. He slows the SUV on the backside of his property, far away from the home that he shares with Peggy, and the converted garage that now serves as a store. "I'll tell you a little story," he says as he stops the Toyota. Back in 1981, he was still living in Burlington with Peggy. He'd been raising some Carole on her family's farm for more than a decade, but he wanted more land. One day, a real estate agent called. "I've got something," he told VMAC. They all drove to the property for a look. That was a big moment in his life, VMAC says. The SUV starts moving again. VMAC and Peggy loved the land, but they weren't sure if they could afford it. But as VMAC stood there on that parcel just outside of Yanceyville, he saw an apple orchard and cornfields. He closed his eyes. When he opened them, he imagined green hills and white cows. So he bought the farm at age 40. That's a late start for a man buying a farm, VMAC says. He shrugs. God didn't call Moses till he was 80. Cows are his business, but grass is his muse. I planted my first fescue when I was 16 years old, he says. It's still there. North Carolina is squarely in the fescue belt. VMAC is not a fescue fan, though, mostly because the common variety puts out seeds in the summertime that get covered in a fungus that causes problems for cows. For now, his cows eat stuff that he has to plant annually, rye and crimson cover. But he's changing his mind thanks to a fescue variety that fights off the fungus. You plant this stuff, VMAC says, and you don't need to replant again. Ever. So there's a movement started now across the fescue belt to change this grass. It's gonna be billions of dollars for farmers to do that. Billions, he says. We just started doing this a couple of years ago ourselves. Delving deep into grass varieties and genetics brings out the engineer in him. Engineers have a mindset, I think, to deal in systems, he says. A farm is a network of individual systems, the cows and the grass, the tree clearing and the breeding, the chicken houses that generate enough revenue to expand and enough manure to fertilize, the high demand for Baldwin beef at the Carborough Farmers Market, the deal that puts his meat on the shelves at Whole Foods. A farm is a complicated system, but VMAC says the more parameters an engineer has got in his project, the happier he is. And thus, VMAC is happy, even though he's planning for a future that he'll never see. A ranch is something you wish your granddaddy started, he says. It takes so long to get it rolling. It's like a locomotive. Once you get it moving, you've got something going, you know? He and Peggy still own the farm, but Craig runs it now. Peggy and I knew we wanted to farm someday. You can't have a family farm without a family, he says. Someday Craig will own this land. For now, he deals with the day-to-day stuff, the trucks, the workers, clearing the hillsides. VMAC is retired. I do what I want to do, he says. He'll get on some heavy machinery now and then. That's fun. And he'll all set up this to outlast him. This land isn't his, he says. He's a temporary caretaker. He keeps insisting on that. VMAC runs his SUV down another dirt road, kicking up dust between rows of barbed wire, eking past the occasional Corolla that's on the wrong side of the fence. Steadily, he has opened up more and more land, buying a few dozen acres at a time over the past quarter century. And he now has some 1,200 acres. There's still more land to come. At the back of his property, he stops the Toyota in front of some white cows. They all stop grazing and raise their heads to stare at him. VMAC gestures out of his window across an open field toward a gently sloping hill. This farm lies in front of that little mountain over there, he says. There's a creek between them. One day I expect to see some cattle on that. Then he realizes how far away it really is. Maybe not me, he says. Maybe my children. The hill is still covered in trees. The fence at the edge of the pasture stops far short of the little mountain. VMAC can still close his eyes and envision green hills with white cows. For now, he eases up on the brake and starts moving again, slowly, deliberately, forward. Baldwin Beef is on North Carolina Highway 86 South in Yanceyville. They have a website, baldwingrassfedbeef.com. And you are listening to Our State Magazine on the Triangle Radio Reading Service. If you have any comments on our program, please call 919-832-5138. And now, Hog Wild. On this Rockingham County farm, past the farm and beyond the pasture, a herd of pigs roots and runs in the forest. far from feral, these animals are being raised for restaurants and grills. But until then, they and the couple who run the sustainable farm are living their best lives. A Tamworth sow is about the size of a clawfoot bathtub and weighs between 400 and 600 pounds. They're lying, some of them, nose to nose in a sun-soaked pasture. And while they're peaceful, grace is not the first word that comes to mind. Mainly, I'm just astonished at the sheer bulk of them. I ask Hillary and Worth Kimmel, why Tamworth, why this particular breed? They do well in all kinds of weather, Worth says, which is necessary in the Piedmont. And they've got great mothering skills, Hillary adds. Half of the next question is out of my mouth before I realize that's the entire ethos of the Kimmel's operation, PTB Farm, right there. Of course, the pigs have great mothering skills. They're a heritage breed. They're meant for an outdoor life, meant to forage across pastureland and forest. They're meant to be part of a farm run exactly this way, which is to say, on a scale and in such a manner as to be responsible to the land. We're young and strong and maybe dumb enough to think we can do it all, Worth says. Hillary nods. This is our fifth year here together, she says. We're still figuring it all out. They met around a bonfire at a party, discovered they'd both gone to Warren Wilson College. Both had a family history of farming. They tried a year on Hillary's family land in Boone, but settled back down here in Reidsville. On these 118 acres that have been in Worth's family since the 1950s. I've always had a need to be working outside, Worth says, as we walk downtown to meet Oscar, the boar. Never considered an inside job. Oscar's a Duroc, although they've had other boars of other stock, Tamworth, Berkshire. They prefer cross-breeding, or rather crossing heritage breeds, Worth explains. It gives the pigs a perfect lean-to-fat ratio. Hillary's story isn't quite as linear as her husband's. In college, it felt like the world was big and I wanted to explore it, she says. I wanted to get as far away from the farm as possible. Oscar ambles our way. His coat is a glossy reddish black. The wire fence between us doesn't seem, on first glance, to be at all sufficient. Oscar is a truck. But then I came back home and it turned out everything I was interested in, social justice, environmentalism, all of that was in farming. She shakes her head and clicks her tongue at Oscar, who stops. I'm glad the sows aren't in heat, she says. When they're in heat, he stinks. He reeks of boar musk. It's awful. Worth looks out at the tree line. Oh, I don't know, he says. It's not all that bad. There's an electric current that runs between Worth and Hillary. Half a joke, the punchline unsaid, because it doesn't need to be, because each of them already knows it. Theirs is the sort of easy rhythm that one imagines would grow between two people wedded to one another, and to their work and their land. I ask about lines of demarcation. Worth says that they sometimes try to stop working by 5 or 6 in the evening. Just go up to the 100-year-old log farmhouse, make dinner, and be husband and wife. But it's easy to see, too, that they might not really want or need those kinds of lines drawn all the time. Theirs is a life where the home is their work, and their partnership threads readily from their kitchen table to the pine market tables at the downtown curb market in Greensboro and the cobblestone market in Winston-Salem. We walk down from the pasture and into the forest, and we step into one of the wooded enclosures with this round of crossed piglets. There are maybe 20 pigs, and Hillary and Worth go back and forth about whether they weigh 150 pounds yet. I don't know, Worth says, eyeing the piglets. I don't think that one weighs as much as I do yet. They'll weigh 250 to 300 pounds by the time they're ready for processing. The pigs run in knots of 3 and 4 as we walk among them. Eventually they nose up to my legs. Sometimes they can get curious and a little mouthy, Hillary warns me. They'll explore the world that way, but they startle easily, so if you get nervous, just do something sudden. She kicks one leg out gently and the pigs jump back. And you'll be fine. The piglets are, well, They're cute. This can't go unsaid. They're reddish-brown, and some of them have black spots, and they're foraging through the duff layer of the forest, eating grubs and roots and acorns. And they're playful. It's difficult. This is the city boy in me, I know, to think of them as a food. I don't tell Hillary and Worth this, of course, but just like I don't tell them that in an alternative universe, a life where a few of my own choices might have gone another way, I can imagine myself living on a farm like this. I don't want to fetishize farming any more than I want to pretend a pork chop isn't a pig. But standing in these woods, you remember, or you realize, a few simple things. Farming is animals and vegetables. So, too, is food. To forget these connections is to forget how to be in contact with the world. PTB Farm is named for Pine Trough Branch, a small stream that feeds into the headwaters of the Haw River. We're walking back up the hill now. I ask Hillary and Worth what's different about PTB, which they're rebranding to stand for Pastured Tastes Better. What's most important to them about this place? We're stewarding this land and this water system, and we're creating something delicious at the same time, says Hillary, who also tells me that she's got a sign at her market table that says, lard is the new kale. They grow vegetables, too, and greens and flowers, and they pasture sheep and cattle as well as hogs. They've started a couple of different community-supported agricultural programs where customers can simply buy credit at the market, and another, a meat box, where customers get different, sometimes unusual, cuts of beef and pork, and recipes to accompany them. People get in a rut, Hillary says. Plus, the more of the animal that people learn to eat, the more sustainable the entire cycle becomes. The Kimmels sell special cuts of pastured pork to chefs in the Piedmont. They make sausage just for themselves and fry it on the wood stove on New Year's Day. They raise 75 to 80 pigs a year. They can't scale up much beyond that because that's about the number of pigs that the land will responsibly yield. They're making a go of it here in Rockingham County, trying to ride the rhythm of the seasons, always tinkering, planning, trying to see over the next rise. They've got a brand new tractor that came in handy after Hurricane Michael took down a dozen trees. That might trade out for the sheep for more space for cows. For right now, Worth says it's enough that they set their own schedule. For right now, it's just what tomorrow morning's chores might bring. And it's getting ready for market 50 Saturdays a year. And it's just being here, Hillary adds. She leans close to Worth. That, she says, and we get to eat some really amazing meals. We just have a few minutes left, so let's do the quiz. I, of course, have to prepare myself by getting to the answer page first, because I rarely know the answers myself. This is called Bargains Abound. Fields of finds await savvy shoppers at North Carolina's flea markets. Written by Allen Hodge. In the farmer's flea market, or rather, excuse me, that was a one in the front there. One. The farmer's flea market has been in the business for more than 50 years and boasts 500 vendors. This bounty of bargains is located near U.S. Highway 64 in what town that's famous for its barbecue, Lexington, Asheville, or Greenville? And the answer is Lexington. The I-40 Flea and Farmers Market in Statesville hosts special events throughout the year, including Kids' Day, a Halloween celebration and exhibitions of what professional sport, featuring meet and greets with athletes such as Boogie Woogie Man, Jimmy Valiant, wrestling, barrel racing, or boxing. And the answer would be wrestling. Decker's Flea Market in Murphy has been around since 1977 and is one of the largest in western North Carolina. One of the most iconic items at Decker's is a life-size replica of what simian? I guess you have to know what a simian is first. Lion, donkey, or gorilla? I was going to say they aren't all monkeys types, are they? No, only a gorilla is a monkey type, and that's the answer. Number four, Sweet Union Flea Market on U.S. Highway 74 calls itself the best and largest in the Charlotte area. What town, the seat of Union County, is home to this popular market, the Sweet Union Flea Market? Monroe, Marshville, or Waxhaw? And the answer would be Monroe. For folks whose flea market tastes run towards salvaged industrial and architectural items, Culpepper's Auto Depot in the mountain community of Otto is the place to go. The building is designed to look like a century-old depot for what railroad known as TFRY? Timber Fork Railway? Tennessee Free Railroad? Or Tallulah Falls Railway? And that latter one is the answer, Tallulah Falls Railway. Number six, Charlie's Flea Market at Event Grounds in Canton has been in business for 10 years. One long-standing vendor, Jack's Final Touch, sells what type of unusual items? Tombstones, crowns, or prom dresses? Yeah, I guessed that one, and I guessed it correctly. Final Touch. Tombstones. Number seven, Fleet Town, USA, opened in 2013 in the former weave room of Alexander Mills. This market has more than 300 vendors and is located in Forest City in what county? Mecklenburg, Rutherford, or Polk? And the answer, to those of you who really know your North Carolina counties, is Rutherford. Number eight, the Spring Road Flea Market, located on the street of the same name in Hickory, was once the home of what kind of entertainment venue? Golf course, racetrack, or drive-in theater? And the answer to number eight is drive-in movie theater. And finally, number nine, Smithfield in Johnston County is home to a 100,000-square-foot flea market that also includes a vegetable market. This market takes its name from what type of tobacco? Burley, brightleaf, or broadleaf? And the answer is brightleaf. Advertisement on the next page. Put the wind... I keep reading that one, and I'm not going to read it anymore. Sorry. The Brightleaf Square, that's a good one to cover. We just talked about Brightleaf. Discover, dine, and delight. See you round the square. Historic Brightleaf Square, historicbrightleaf.com in Durham, of course. Well, that's about all the time we have for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call the studios at 919-832-5138. So long. Until next time.